You're listening to the Whole Hog Football Podcast, sponsored by Bud Anderson Home Services, bringing you the latest news, position analysis, and more. Here's your hosts, Matt Jones and Scotty Bordelon.
Welcome into the Whole Hog Football Podcast. Today, we'll recap the Razorbacks game against Georgia Southern, their 45-10 win last weekend. But first, maybe the big news of the day in Razorback football is that tonight, the 2022 football schedule is going to be announced. Now, what we don't know are the order of the games, but what we do know is we know the 12 opponents that Arkansas will play. So there's a lot of interest in this today based on what I'm seeing on social media. And so we'll kind of get into this because, you know, it's a pretty difficult looking schedule for the Razorbacks in 2022, certainly from a non-conference perspective, one of the tougher ones that I think they've played in quite some time. Matt Jones with Clay Henry, the publisher of Hogs Illustrated, Scotty Bordelon of WholeHogSports.com. All right, so before we get into this, guys, let's just say what the schedule is. In SEC play, of course, they'll play all the teams from the SEC West. That means at home next year they'll play Alabama, LSU, and Ole Miss. On the road, they will play Auburn and Mississippi State. The Texas A&M game still in Arlington. That contract doesn't run out through, or it runs through 2024. From the SEC East, they will play at Missouri. They will get South Carolina coming to Fayetteville next year as part of that rotating SEC East schedule. And then the thing that's kind of got, I think, everybody up in arms is the non-conference schedule. At home, they will play Cincinnati. They will play Liberty. They will play Missouri State, coached by Bobby Petrino. And in the middle of SEC play in mid-October, they will go to BYU and play a game for the first time in Provo, Utah. Clay, it's not a schedule that has any Power 5 teams from the non-conference, but given what Cincinnati and BYU and even Liberty have been able to do, and then, of course, you have Bobby Petrino's reputation at Missouri State, this all assumes those coaches are in place. We haven't gone through the, you know, the crazy season with coaching carousel yet, but that's a pretty interesting schedule from a non-conference perspective.
Yeah, I'm not sure that Missouri State would be a team that you would be fearful losing to. Those others, I mean, it just looks like a schedule that things didn't fall right a few years ago. You could go 0-12. I mean, it just, don't have to worry. Chad Morris is not coming back. He's going to stay at Allen. It's a crazy schedule. Season ticket holders ought to be excited. And heck, I'm even looking forward to going to Utah. There's some really good trout streams right around Provo.
That's the first of two games that Arkansas has scheduled in Utah, by the way, over the next 5 years. They go to Salt Lake City in 2026 to play the University of Utah. BYU is scheduled to come back to Fayetteville in 2023. Those other three games that they play next year are one-time-only games. But you look at this, I mean, Cincinnati's in the top 25 right now. BYU is in the top 25 right now. I think Liberty's just outside of the top 25, knocking on the door. And if nothing else, Scotty, what it does is it creates a really nice storyline going into all of these games that you don't always have. I mean, you didn't have a great storyline going into Georgia Southern, other than is Arkansas going to be able to avoid a letdown? You know, assuming that the coaches stay in place, you got Luke Fickell at Cincinnati. It'll be interesting to see if they can keep him. They're moving to the Big 12, but he's been a big name in the coaching circles for the last few years. Liberty, coached by Hugh Freeze, and we mentioned the Petrino angle at Missouri State. That would be one of the most anticipated, if not the most anticipated, game against an FCS team that I can remember.
Just real quick before I get into that, I nearly fell off my bar stool when Clay made that Chad Morris quip. But we'll move on from that. The schedule just...
Sorry.
It's all good. It's a really good schedule, really tough. I think there's going to be intrigue with each of these games. Like Matt mentioned, there's going to be storylines that come from even... the biggest storyline is probably Bobby Petrino coming back, and that might be the worst team that you're playing that's on your schedule. And, you know, just watching... Obviously, all these teams that are on Arkansas' schedule next year, they're going to have turnover from what they have on their roster this year. But this year, BYU looks absolutely no fun to play whatsoever. I mean, I think they snapped their streak against Utah in that rivalry series that they have. Cincinnati is looks like they're no fun to play either. It'll be interesting to see if Luke Fickell is still there next year. He's, you know, one of the coaches that I think is, you know, when big job openings come up inevitably, you know, maybe during this season, obviously during the offseason, he's going to be a guy that is probably mentioned as a candidate for some of those positions. At the same time, I'm looking at the schedule and I'm thinking like, I mean, Alabama is far and away the best team on your schedule, but I feel like a lot of these other games are very winnable. Like BYU is going to be really, really tough on the road. Auburn is too, Mississippi State and Missouri. But those are games that, you know, if Arkansas keeps building the way that they are now, and maybe you get a couple of guys that are on this roster to hang around another year, I mean, Arkansas's got a chance, despite this schedule being as tough as it is, they could possibly make a jump in year three. And I think that's what a lot of people look for in the third year under a new coach. I think the possibility is there, but man, it's pretty tough. But you know, from our perspective, it looks like it's going to be a pretty fun year.
Yeah. Let's go back to the Cincinnati stuff with Fickell. I think he'll be there. I think the only way that he leaves Cincinnati is if Ohio State job comes open and, or, you know, maybe Michigan, but it would have to be, an A job in that area of the country. From what the people that I know that have been around him and think they know him, it's kind of like Chris Peterson at Boise all those years. Everybody make a run at him, but he's not going. He's going to go to Washington or Stanford. That's it. And kind of finally Washington came open when he was thinking. But I think Fickell will be there. Whether Hugh Freeze will be there, who knows? Bobby Petrino might. This might be his last year at Missouri State, so you may not see some of these coaches. It's interesting. Bobby has a good year. Hey, somebody will say, oh, he's reinvented himself. He's good. They'll be wrong, but that's a possibility.
Jim Harbaugh loses to Ohio State again. That Michigan job might come open.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I think Fickell's an Ohio State guy. It would be hard to foresee him going to face Michigan. Interesting here, Cincinnati and BYU going to the Big 12. The reason BYU's on the schedule next year is because they fulfilled that Power 5 mandate that the SEC has for its schools. You can either play a Power 5 team, or you can play one of the service academies, or you can play Notre Dame or BYU under the current, you know, format, and that would satisfy the Power 5 requirement in terms of playing a non-conference team. Cincinnati, by the way, they remind, and it's funny because Houston and UCF are going to the Big 12 with them. Those are the types of schools that have been able to attract and retain what I think are pretty quality head coaches over the last few years. I mean, you've got Dana Holgorsen. Who would have ever thought that he might leave West Virginia for a job like Houston? You got Gus Malzahn right now at UCF, and they've had a nice run of quality coaches there with Josh Heupel and Scott Frost. People ask, though, why would Arkansas put this schedule together? I think you have to go back and look, and fortunately for you, I did, when the schedule was put together. And these four games were scheduled between 2016 and 2019. And I think it goes to underscore the point that you just never know what a team is going to be like that far in advance, especially when you're talking about teams during that group of five or FCS level. And here's what I mean by this. BYU, the year before they scheduled, 4-9. That they were 4-9 in 2017. That was the year before Arkansas scheduled them. Cincinnati was 11-2. That was the year that Fickell kind of had his breakout year at Cincinnati. Liberty was 6-6. They scheduled Liberty before, or I think they began the talks with Liberty before Hugh Freeze was hired there. And they scheduled this Missouri State game in 2016. And Missouri State was coming off a 1-10 season. Who would have ever foreseen that Bobby Petrino was going to ever be coaching in Springfield? Clay, it reminds me of whenever Arkansas scheduled Southern Cal in 2001. They were coming off, I think, like a 5-6 season in their first year under Pete Carroll. Nobody could have ever foreseen what USC was about to become. But then by the time Arkansas got them in 05 and 06, they had Leinart and Bush, and you go on, and they were this great juggernaut powerhouse program. It's just hard to foresee what a team's going to look like when you're scheduling so far in advance.
Yeah, how about Arkansas playing Toledo and not knowing what Matt Campbell was. It's like, oh, we've got this this team that we think we'll handle in Little Rock. No, not with Matt Campbell, you're not. Matt, I would say that another reason why you do this is that it has just become tougher and tougher to sell season tickets. And you cannot understate what this kind of a schedule means when you've got a good Arkansas team probably coming back next year. You're losing a lot of seniors, but you still you've got the program stable, and that helps season ticket sales. But it's still with all the games on TV now, it is just especially September when it's hot, you got these kind of games, and it just really changes the dynamics of season tickets.
Well, and I mean, you know, I think a lot of people would look at next year's schedule and say, well, you've got Alabama, you've got LSU. That's a season ticket seller's dream. But I think what you're seeing from a lot of people is that they're not going to buy season tickets. They're going to take that money that they might put toward a foundation requirement or season tickets, and they'll go buy on the secondary market tickets over face value for those types of games, and they'll come to one or two games a year. You know, this year they tried to package Texas together. And I think you're onto something, Clay, because what I've noticed from Hunter Yurecek since he was hired is that in the years when they don't have a Power Five team on the schedule in Fayetteville, they're going out and they are getting one or multiple really quality group of five teams that are scheduled to come into Fayetteville that year, maybe to offset the lack of a Notre Dame or a Texas or a BYU or whatever the case may be. You look at 2024, you've got Louisiana Tech and you've got UAB. They both had a lot of success lately in their conferences. You look at 2026, you've got Memphis and you've got Tulsa. Obviously Tulsa's down right now, but that's a team that kind of ebbs and flows. And it seems like every, maybe 4 to 5 years, they have a really good 9, 10, 11 type win season. So I think you're right about selling season tickets. That's becoming harder and harder to do that. And this certainly, supplements the Alabama and LSU and Ole Miss games quite nicely.
Something I think fans do too is, maybe instead of buying season tickets, you get all your home games. Maybe you just kind of cherry pick a couple that you really want to see. You get those maybe on the secondary market, and then you spend some of that leftover money that you would have spent on season tickets on going to, just kind of treating yourself to a road game. And BYU, I mean, if you're into the scenery, and like Clay, if you're into the trout fishing and all that stuff, like that's kind of a dream trip right there. And there's no telling. Arkansas may never play at BYU again. So, I mean, that's maybe a once in a lifetime type trip that, a lot of people aren't going to want to miss out on.
One other scheduling note, of course, Arkansas, and this kind of fits into what we've got coming up this week. Arkansas stays in Arlington next year. We've got, counting Saturday's game, 4 more games at AT&T Stadium. Clay, I don't think there's any doubt, listening to Hunter Yurecek talk or listening to Ross Bjork talk down at A&M, that this series is going back to campus in 2025 when that contract runs out. I think the question becomes whether or not Arkansas keeps a presence at AT&T Stadium. I don't know about you. It seems to me, though, in listening to Hunter Yurecek speak, last week at our Hogs Illustrated Sports Club, or 2 weeks ago, that doesn't seem like that's an option, that he wants as many games as he can get on campus, and that, from an annual standpoint, you're not going to see AT&T Stadium be part of Arkansas' schedule moving forward.
Yeah, one of the things that you need to kind of pay attention to is that there's no guarantee that Arkansas plays Texas A&M on an annual basis either. We don't know what this schedule is going to turn into with the expansion, with Texas and Oklahoma coming in. And, is it going to be pods? Is it going to be divisions? What are the divisions? Are there no divisions? Is it going to be, rotation where, some teams fall off the schedule, for a couple of years? I think it's pretty commonly held that Arkansas and Texas A&M will continue to play, but I guess I'll believe it when I see it. We just don't know.
Yeah, I mean, is it pods? Is it 4 permanent or 3 permanent opponents? We don't even know if they're going to go to 9 games yet. There's a lot of things that they have to work out as far as the SEC schedule. They got to figure out when Oklahoma and Texas are coming to the league too. I know they say it's 2025. But there's some thought that it could be earlier, although listening to Yurecek at our luncheon the other day, He laid out a lot of reasons why he thought it would be pretty difficult for them to come to the league early. Maybe a year early might be a possibility, but in terms of grant of rights with the Big 12 TV agreement with the SEC, he said he thought that it would be very difficult. The Whole Hog Football Podcast is brought to you by Bud Anderson Home Services. Visit them online at gocallbud.com.
Bud Anderson is proud to be the official heating and cooling provider for the Arkansas Razorbacks. This partnership will support all Razorback athletics for over 400 student athletes across 19 sports. Woo-pee!
WholeHogSports.com has the largest, most experienced staff of reporters covering sports in Arkansas. Football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. You'll find it at WholeHogSports.com. The website includes up-to-minute news, daily commentaries, and award-winning photography from the staffs of Hogs Illustrated and the Democrat Gazette. For subscriptions, call 1-800-757-6277. That's 1-800-757-6277. Or visit us online today. WholeHogSports.com.
Want more coverage of your home team? Download the Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app. Check out the Fan Zone and get up-to-the-minute videos, podcasts, and features on football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. Search for Whole Hog Sports on Apple TV, Roku, and Amazon Fire at home. And take it with you on the go by downloading it for your mobile device in your app store. The Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app. Get it today.
Welcome back to the Whole Hog Football Podcast.
Arkansas coming off a 45-10 win over Georgia Southern last week. Not a lot of people want to talk about this game because they're so hyped up still about the Texas game the week before that or the Texas A&M game coming up. Clay, they took care of business. They did what they needed to do. I thought the game played out a little bit how I thought it would. Scotty, you predicted the right score. You had 45-10. Kudos to you for having the right score.
Yeah, this is the point where when you're working on this podcast, make sure you put applause in there when Scotty getting the right score. I was telling him in the final few seconds of the game, it's like I've been doing this for 30 years and predicting scores, and I think I've gotten two right. So, yeah. Scotty, you've only got one more to go to tie me.
I think Matt's pretty good about this too, or at least predicting the final score, and then he sees the opening line on the game. And it pretty much matches up. But Matt's been pretty good about this, I think.
I got the margin right for Georgia Southern. I think I said 42-7, so I was close. But Scotty wins the prize. What do you take away from the Georgia Southern game? I thought that offensively they played really well. Defensively they played really well. But can you take a whole lot away from it?
Yeah, I think what you can take away from it is what you said in the opening. A lot of fans are talking about the Texas game or the Texas A&M game. And I'm sure that's the nightmare for a coach is that do you have your players' attention for a game like that? And I think they did. Now, maybe they didn't play perfect in the first half and they were, a little bit sloppy. But I think that was a representative performance by a heavily favored, prohibitive favored team in a trap game. And so that's the good news is that they can just kind of roll through one of those odd week games where there's a big name opponent on either end. So I give them credit for that.
We'll get both of your thoughts on this. We'll start with you, Scotty, but I thought the big news that came out of the Georgia Southern game was the injuries to Dalton Wagner. It's not been disclosed what his injury is. We think it's probably to his back. He was dealing with some back injuries, and it seemed like he was probably favoring his back when he came out of the medical tent on the sideline Saturday. And then what appears to be some sort of knee or leg injury to Ricky Stromberg. Again, he was dealing with those knee injuries during preseason that kept him from practicing for the full preseason. Sam Pittman, during his press conference on Monday, said that they are going to prepare as if they are not going to have either of them for the game. Now, he didn't rule either of them out. There's the possibility. I think he said he'll know more on Wednesday. There's a possibility that maybe they can return to practice later in the week. He said they were for sure not going to practice on Monday. But this is a big deal, I think, because Texas A&M, it seems to me like the strength of that team is its defense, and the strength of that defense is probably its defensive front with players like DeMarvin Leal. And so when you don't have a couple of your starters potentially going up against a defensive line of that caliber, it's certainly noteworthy going into the game.
It's a big deal, especially when one of the guys that goes down is your center. It's just kind of the captain of the offensive line in a way, or the quarterback of the offensive line, I guess I should say. But probably looking at a little bit of a reaggravation of that knee injury that Ricky Stromberg had in camp that didn't keep him out all that long, which was kind of remarkable. I know it wasn't like a huge injury, but still it's an MCL deal. That, you know, I don't know if it, I guess it hasn't lingered because, I mean, you look at Pro Football Focus numbers and Ricky is the fifth highest graded center in the country. And so if he is not able to play against A&M, that is a pretty big deal. And then that slides Ty Cleary over to center. And who would that put at right guard? Bo Limmer. And then possibly Brady Latham at right tackle if Dalton Wagner's not able to go. And then Luke Jones comes in at left guard. And then the only guy that is in his natural position on the offensive line is Myron Cunningham. That's not an ideal place to be in a game like this, facing a defensive line as good as A&M's. But I would probably, if I had to guess, I'm a little bit more confident that Ricky Stromberg will play against Texas A&M. This is just a gut feeling, and my gut obviously can be very wrong, but I feel like Dalton Wagner, he's been just dealing with his back for a while. Like all throughout camp, he was wearing a tan wrap around his lower back. And we got to remember, like, he's 6'8" and he's well over 300 pounds doing what he does on a regular basis on the offensive line. That just takes a toll on your body, and don't know how quickly he's going to recover. So I don't know that Tyquise Crawford is going to be the answer at right tackle. And I think Clay has mentioned that a little bit, maybe on the board. I think I heard him on the radio this morning too. I think Latham might be your guy at right tackle if Wagner's not able to go, but it's not ideal, especially because you feel pretty good about your running game and it all starts up front. But you know, if Ricky Stromberg can play, you know, I feel much better about Arkansas's chances.
The good news is that all these guys have extensive experience. I mean, they played Luke Jones some last year, and he's an older player. You're not asking guys that haven't played to step in like say Crawford, but they're getting thin, and they're not. That's the thing that you really worry about is, yeah, they've got a fix for what's going on right now, but they get another injury. You know, that you look out there in the third quarter and the only guy that's playing the position that he started the game at was Myron Cunningham. And I give Sam Pittman, you know, old offensive line coach, a lot of credit for working these combinations in preseason, but I don't know how many more combinations he worked past this one.
Yeah, this is where kind of Sam has talked about this a little bit in the preseason. He didn't call it this, but they were basically like catastrophe type periods where, you know, the offense runs out there. Maybe you're down your top two quarterbacks or you're down your top two right tackles. And I think that's where, you know, some of that work could come into play and kind of, you know, bear fruit a little bit this week.
Well, we put KJ Jefferson on our magazine. He ended up throwing for 366 yards and 3 touchdowns against Georgia Southern. Of course, he was helped along a good bit by those touchdown throws of 60 yards to Warren Thompson and 91 yards to Treylon Burks. There's been some concern, I think, among the fan base about his accuracy. Now, one thing I notice is that he doesn't really seem to move his feet a lot when he's in the pocket. He just kind of turns. What do you think about his accuracy? Are those concerns unfounded, or do you think there's something to that when they play better competition?
Yeah, Scotty did a nice job of going through the throws that he's making. And what I will say is that dude can throw the deep ball. And that's been impressive to me. He doesn't miss wide open guys deep. And you saw it against Missouri as well. So, I think when he is comfortable in the pocket, he can deliver that deep ball. But when he has to turn, one way or the other, that's when he seems to be a little bit off. You should slide your feet and reset them. And that's the no-no for a quarterback, is not getting your feet set for the throw that you're going to make. But he's gotten better. And I won't tell you, I've been watching Arkansas football for a long time, and there's not many quarterbacks that have put 40 on Texas. So I'll give him that. And in fact, you just go through the list. What Matt Jones, he did, was 38.
Yep.
And then who was it in 1981 was the quarterback for that? That was 41. That's it. You don't have a lot of big numbers against those Longhorns. And so I'll give him credit for that. And I think his threat in the run game just makes everything else work. But your question about his accuracy, not perfect, but he's getting better.
Yeah, I charted him with 6 inaccurate passes against Georgia Southern, which was the most he's had in a game to this point. I think he had 3 or 4 against Rice. And then I didn't chart him with a single one against Texas. And that, obviously, I'm categorizing, like, he threw a pick, so I count it as a pick, or he threw a pass and it got broken up, that's a PBU. I don't chart it accurate, inaccurate, just chart, kind of the result of it. But KJ, he still made, I would probably say, his best throws of the year against Georgia Southern. And the plan early last week was to air it out a little bit more. The first 2 weeks, he let loose on 4 balls that traveled 16 or more yards downfield against Rice and Texas. Against Georgia Southern, there were 7, and he completed 4 of them. And those 4 completions the other day went for 152 yards and a touchdown. And the ball to Warren Thompson was a dime. That was – he may not throw a better pass the rest of his career. I mean, Arkansas fans probably hope that's not the case, but that was an on-the-money throw right there. And I think he's doing a pretty good job. Like, some of these passes are inaccurate, but he's not putting the ball in jeopardy. His interceptable passes, that number is pretty low. That's obviously what you want to see. And we still have to remember, that the Georgia Southern game was his 5th start of his career. I mean, he's still learning and he's still growing. And I know a lot was made last year about KJ kind of being the understudy to Felipe, learning a lot about the position, about leadership, how to get guys, committed to what you're saying and what you're doing. I think Felipe probably, I don't know if this is true or not, but I would imagine, Felipe may have given him some tips and tricks on throwing the deep ball, because Felipe was phenomenal on deep balls last year. And through 3 games, KJ's 8 of 11 for almost 300 yards. So it was good to see him push the ball down the field a little bit more, because there were, I think, 23 passes in the first couple of weeks that didn't travel more than 5 yards.
Later this week, we'll have a much more in-depth look at Arkansas and Texas A&M for that podcast. Guys, let's get out of here on this today. Darren McFadden spoke at the Little Rock Touchdown Club on Monday, and seems to be kind of the talk every time that McFadden is in the news. He was asked a lot about whether he thought his jersey should be retired, that number 5 that he wore at Arkansas. Of course, there's only 2 jerseys that have ever been retired, or 2 jersey numbers that have been retired at Arkansas. Those are number 77 for Brandon Burlsworth, and number 12 was retired for Clyde Scott. It came out of retirement for Steve Little to be able to wear it. And then, he had his great All-America kicking career at Arkansas. Then it's gone back into retirement for, the last 40 years or so. Clay, what are your thoughts? You think number 5 should be retired?
Probably so. And let me just say this. It is unfair to ask Darren McFadden if his number should be retired.
Agree.
That's the wrong guy to ask. There's no way he can answer that other than to say, I'm so happy for the guys that are wearing my jersey. And I thought it was, and I've talked to Clyde Scott and talked to his son. It was unfair to ask him, can Steve Little wear your jersey? And it's been my understanding that Coach Broyles had already made the decision to give Steve Little the number. And then he asked Clyde Scott, retroactive, what's Clyde Scott going to say? So they're the wrong – you have to decide, I'm going to retire the numbers. Don't ask Darren McFadden. Before or after, just do it.
you know, the hard thing about football is that you can only retire so many jerseys. You have so many players on the team. You have all these rules, you know, related to double jersey numbers and whatnot. You know, what I think Arkansas would be better suited doing is having some sort of like ring of honor, like the Dallas Cowboys have. Now, I certainly think somebody like McFadden, you know, if there's anybody that's worthy of having their jersey retired, it's Darren McFadden. I think, you know, we probably all sit here in agreement that he's the, you know, if not the greatest football player who's ever played at Arkansas, he's in the top two, maybe three. Clay, you might have a couple of others that you would put in his category.
Your own target, yeah.
But, you know, I mean, but, you know, I think there are a lot of players. I think there are a lot of individuals who have had contributions to the Arkansas program, you know, who I think it would be really neat to see their name in the stadium. I mean, I think if even a guy like Paul Eels, you know, it'd be great to see his name somewhere in the football stadium. So is jersey retirement the right thing to do? I think you have to limit that for just truly the very best of the best, you know, but I certainly think that Arkansas, it's past time for them to, you know, recognize these players in kind of a more permanent way inside their stadium, similar to the way that their peers do. Go to WholeHogSports.com this week. We'll have plenty of coverage leading up to the Razorbacks game against Texas A&M. We'll also have more once that schedule is released tonight. We'll be back with another podcast later this week to look more into the Arkansas-Texas A&M game in Arlington. It's the biggest game of the week in terms of AP Top 25. For Clay Henry and Scotty Bordelon, I'm Matt Jones. We'll see you later this week.
The proceeding has been a production of WholeHogSports.com. Look for our latest podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast store. And visit us anytime at WholeHogSports.com for the latest news and commentary.